have they got like £1 million trapped?
Can't say more about Tom Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you done a poll?
Yeah, like minority report.
I feel like I'm in good company.
You can ask some difficult questions.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the Alchemy Festival. So, the Alchemy Festival exists to support the development of professional development of emerging artists. And it also exists to support the presentation and creation of lots of lovely new work. So this is the critics panel. My name is Ria, and I'm one of the co-directors here at the North Ward. This is Tim Banner, Hannah Greenstreet, and Ava Wong-Davies, and I'm delighted that they've joined us this afternoon. We have about 45 minutes together. The reason we're set up like this is because we're recording all of the panels this weekend so that they will go online and lots of lovely people can hear them across the UK. Otherwise, we would totally be closer to you and it wouldn't feel so much like a press conference. Here we go. So at any point, please feel free to chip in. So if you've got a question for anyone on the panel or even a comment or something you want to respond to, please chuck it in at any time in the 45 minutes. You totally don't have to wait until the end to say something. So this is a conversation, if you like, between all of us in this room, even though we have a big table in front of us. So would it be possible just to introduce yourselves first of all, please?
Yeah, I'm Tim Banno, and I am one of the critics for The Stage newspaper, and I'm also a radio producer, so I work on Radio 4.
I'm Hannah Greenstreet, and I am one of the co-reviews editors of Exeunt, also work for The Stage. And I'm doing a PhD, and I'm also a playwright, so lots of hats.
I'm Alva, and I work for The Stage.
Fantastic, thank you. So I'll start with a couple of questions, and then as I said, if anyone wants to chuck in, then please do. So really general question to begin with, what for you is theatre criticism? So what does it mean to you? Alva, do you want to kick off?
Tim. So for me, I guess I can only really respond in a personal way, which is the only way I can really respond. I only started about 18 months ago, and for me, good criticism never, before that point, it was never really something that I considered like an art form in itself, or like something that was particularly an interesting form of writing that you could just read just sort of like casually without seeing the show. And so I'd only sort of grown up on like Michael Billington. Reading those reviews and not reading anything else, and so you know, for that reason, I thought that. But then, when I was sort of about like 2-3 years ago, I started reading stuff by Maddie Foster and Meg Vaughan, and I started reading Englund, and it's all this sort of new criticism which felt very sort of interesting in itself and formally experimental, and just the excitement of the work it was reviewing. So that's why I started reviewing, because that felt accessible to me. So theatre criticism for me has always, since I've started writing it, meant a sort of active engagement with the work in the scene, which mm-hmm. I think a lot of it doesn't feel like it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Thank you. Yeah, I think I'd agree with that, and I wonder whether there's a distinction to be made between theatre reviews and theatre criticism, or whether theatre criticism is like the broad umbrella and reviews are just a genre of that, because I think reviews are more about evaluating the show, backing on a star rating, saying what was good, what was bad, which can feel quite patronising, whereas I want my theatre criticism to be more like a contribution to a conversation, kind of thinking about it as more of an ecology, thinking about critics as part of that ecology. And I know sometimes theatre makers don't want to think about us in that way, but I think it's more helpful to think about it as a creative conversation and a real engagement.
Yeah, I think interesting. Similarly to Ava, before getting involved in criticism, it was quite. It seemed like quite a set, structured, quite almost formulaic thing. But then Maddie Costa and Meg Vaughan seemed to have opened lots of people's eyes to what it can be, and the creativity you can embrace when you're responding to a piece of work. But then as sort of I've been doing it for a few years, the opportunities to, I suppose, do it professionally or earn any money from it, basically, the platforms where you're making that money are very, they have quite strict rules. So for the stage, you know, the way we can write reviews is very strict. They're sort of usually 250 words. You have to include certain things, you know, information about the plot or the director and stuff like that. So actually, the more I've done it, the more it's been kind of reduced again to something quite sort of tight and structured. I miss being able to play with stuff a bit more. So that's it for me at the moment.
Thank you. That's really interesting. So I'm hearing lots about, well, active engagement, I think, the phrase was that you used, and also that difference between, I suppose, having the parameters of an organisation, giving you parameters to write a review specifically, versus being involved in a conversation, being involved in kind of creative dialogue. So, especially riffing on that, what is the function of a critic? And function feels like quite a harsh word, but I suppose what role do you play in that arts conversation? We're a body of people, we're a community where we are all involved in the creation of work, the conversation around work, the communication of work, the delivery of work. We all kind of like shows. So where do you see a critic kind of within that community?
I think a lot of that question comes down to sort of like who do you write for?
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't really know. I think people, like, I've been asked that before, and I actually don't know. I've been thinking about it, and like for a while I was like, they're definitely breaking for the makers of the show, but then I've sort of been a bit sort of suspicious of that sort of quite recently, because I'm a bit like, I think that is maybe actually kind of gatekeepery, or sort of you sort of, if you're writing a review for the makers to read and sort of respond to, then I worry that that's sort of not really accessible for people who don't go to the theatre, and it's just sort of maintaining an ecology within a very small community, which isn't really an ecology, if that makes sense. And so, but at the same time, I don't want to write solely for the audience, because that feels like very much like a sort of stage way of doing it, which is fine because it's an industry newspaper, but it does feel quite clinical sometimes. So I'm not really sure where you can sort of sit in between them. So I've been kind of just like writing them for myself in the end, because I don't really know what else to do. So I'm just going to write a review in order to sort of make sense of the show for myself. A lot of the time. Yeah.
Like a reflection almost?
Yeah.
So you're almost kind of working something out as you're talking about it.
I prefer to like sort of say that, I like respond to shows rather than review a show, because
mm-hmm.
that just, again, it's what Anna's saying, it's a more sort of equal relationship between the show and the critic.
It also feels like a really useful differentiation, I think, in terms of for a maker, say, hearing an individual response is very different from a show being reviewed.
I guess there's a fundamental economic reality, which is that generally reviewers get comps, and we are therefore, like, we are given those comps to provide some publicity, I guess, to the show. Like, they wouldn't hand out comps if it wasn't that. And I think sometimes it's depressing, because you get your review is just reduced to a pull quote, and it's put on a poster and like a star rating, and that seems like quite a limiting way to view criticism, but it also does serve its purpose. So there's that aspect. I think with my excellent reviews, I think of them either as a creative response or a kind of, this again sounds very grand, but I like to think of it as like archiving shows for the future, because I am a PhD student in theatre studies. Theatre is obviously a very ephemeral medium, and I find out some crucial details about shows from reviews. So I kind of think, I wish someone had written in-depth review of that show, so it's preserved for the future or for other people who can't see shows. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's that strikes me as well when writing a review, which is that you're sort of trying to capture the moment in a slightly more permanent form. But I think it changes for every show. I think each response is different for every show, and as I would point out for the publication as well, or the outlet. But for Exient, it's when I was doing stuff for Exient, it was like you're saying, it's about flexing creative muscles as well as responding to something. Whereas for the stage, I suppose that idea of posterity or archival purpose is a bit higher up in my mind. But then ultimately, for the stage, a lot of the reviews are overnight, so you get straight back from the theatre and you sit down and write. So you're just literally making sense of it as quickly as you can, and in that sense, you can't really think about anything apart from that. So maybe you're just writing for yourself in that sense. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had a show where it just made no sense to you at all, and you still have to write the review?
What do you do? All the time. But that feels so like, because I think it plays into this thing of like a hierarchy of like the critic is like the all-seeing eye who like knows everything about everything and has this like kind of encyclopedic knowledge of like, all these shows that they've seen. And like I'm just like a human being, yeah. And like I really don't understand a lot of like live art, and like. I don't know, but I feel like that's a really sort of a quietly radical thing, is to be able to be like, I don't really know what this is, but I'm trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to give you a taste of what it was about, but I resent the idea that like a critic would be sort of above a show.
Mm-hmm. I think Kate Wyver tried to file a review of a forced entertainment show, which was just like, I don't get this, I don't get this, I don't get this. And Alice did not publish it actually, but someone else published it. But I think that's a valid response. But also, like, some shows aren't, especially live art, aren't necessarily so concerned with like meaning and sense making. So I kind of got this with Moot at the Yard. I really didn't get it, and I kind of wrote about that frustration and that affective experience of watching it. But then a few months ago, I was suddenly like, Moot is just like how I feel about Brexit. Now I get it. So maybe it just takes a few months to process some shows, but obviously criticism doesn't really allow you to that time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, because you can either admit it or you bluff it. And I think if you're writing for an industry publication, you're probably more likely to bluff it. Yeah. But then I think as well there's an element where you can just do as much research as possible. I'm not saying I'm bluffing. You can just do as much research as possible around the show and the makers, and you know, maybe they've done interviews or maybe they've said something about it on Twitter that might give you a sort of key to unlocking it a bit. Mm-hmm. So you just have to find strategies. And again, in a sort of overnight rush, that's it's tricky, but just find something.
What your route in is, or what your next in is.
Well, like the ones that, like, I mean, because it depends. Like, the person at the gate is very different. Like, the person at the National. So the National, they have like a weird, like, cordoned off area, and it's really weird. And like, it's just like it's really strange. It's like, why you don't do this?
The critic's pen.
Yeah. Right. And then everyone's like sort of circling and like sort of, like drinking wine. It's really strange.
With their warm white wine.
Yeah. And then it's, I don't know. I personally hate them because I always feel like the only sort of person below 25 and not white, you know? So I'm always just a bit like, oh, this feels really weird and sort of gross, and it is weird that there's a sort of specified night for all of us to come and like give a verdict.
In Ireland, I was doing a show there a while ago, and there was a very definite, I think it was the Abbey, there was a very definite thing about people saying we do not call it press night, we call it opening night. And I, as a director, I've totally taken that forward in terms of, I can't demand that a building doesn't call it a press night, but in terms of how I speak to my company or my actors, I'm always like, let's just call it opening. Like, we're launching, we're opening, it's the beginning of a run. Otherwise, sometimes for a group or for a company, it does feel, and directors and creative team, it does feel like it's the be all or end all, and it's kind of like live or die on this night, which is a huge pressure.
I think they do that a lot more on Broadway and in New York as well, where the critics would tend to go in, you know, in the week preceding opening night, and then opening night saved for, you know, starry guests and things. Mm-hmm. And they're doing that a bit more in the West End as well. But yeah, I mean, when I started out, press nights were really exciting because. Mm. Biggins or whatever. which is, it's exciting if you're young and impressionable. Yes. But they really quickly get very weird when it's the same faces and you know, critics just don't smile and they're sort of there was one
very severe, like, yeah. It's really serious.
And there was one press night where there was a critic who so it was for you know, a mainstream national newspaper, and he was a bit late, and there was a whole row of critics, all the other mainstream press critics sitting in a row, and he was late, and he sort of shuffled past them. So he's been at the opening night probably 3 or 4 times a week with these people for the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. And he didn't say hello to any of them. It's just really odd.
Well, they could have all shuffled up so he could be at the end, but clearly the decision was made.
They wanted to make him embarrassed.
Do you think of your, in terms of labelling, we call this critic panel, but do you think that I am a critic, or is there a different language that you use for yourself? Like, I don't, like your official title at the stage, for example, and yeah, so, you know, we're kind of going, you three are critics, but we've used the term reviewer, we've talked about kind of active engagement and conversation, so yeah, how do you think about it?
Ava and I were talking about how we found the post for Bunny that saying people who make a living from criticism. And that is not true. I am lucky that I now get paid to write, but I live on my PhD scholarship. I do not make a living from criticism. And I think that's a point in terms of access that you do, unless you're very lucky, there are so few full-time jobs in criticism, you do need some kind of other job. So I'm not really sure how I'd define myself, because
multi-roller.
Yeah, I do wear lots of different hats, and I don't know whether I want to even call myself a critic when I'm talking about my kind of academic work, because in a way that's kind of long form, like 20,000 words on Alice Birch is like long form criticism, but also no one would publish that. I don't really know. I think I've been toying with the term theatre writer, but it just sounds very pretentious. But just that idea that you write about theatre and you write theatre, is quite nice. Yeah. I don't know what you think.
Because that's really interesting, like, it's also true, something weird about, like, what do you call yourself if you're a critic? I don't know, if you're a critic, or if you're a reviewer or a blogger. And I was like, oh, I think I'm a critic, that's sort of moving away, like, theatre writer. But it's just, I think, because, like you said, the language is sort of, like, not big enough for it. I think when I think of critic, I think of Billington. And I just, if I look at Billington, I'm like, I don't see anything between us that I could, like, you know, the only thing that we have in common about our writing is that we both, like, you know, put the name of the show and review, you know. So it doesn't feel appropriate to sort of, not appropriate, that's not right, but, like, it doesn't feel right to have that term, because I'd rather move away. Mm-hmm. Word. And I think there's a lot of hierarchy around the word. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, I write for a local paper, and we do a lot of touring shows, often performing for 1 or 2 nights. I'm actually in the more London days. I'm often meeting performances, storytellers, or the involved in small scale theatre, and they cannot get anything reviewed. I wonder how you make your choices, and whether you go out and see small-scale kind of small-scale theatres, maybe still in the country, but only one done in London.
Yeah, well, so I do get to choose what I see, but I've got quite a specific remit as well, which is mainly musicals and mainly West End or not off West End, what would it be called?
Fringe.
And Fringe, yeah.
Yeah.
And Fringe shows, but they're usually in the theatres that would get. I suppose it's slightly aimed towards what people want to read about. So, you know that, for example, Maggie Smith at the Bridge Theatre is going to get a lot of readers. And that's an unfortunate necessity for a print newspaper because they've got to keep on going, basically. So I do pick what I see, but you know, within my remit, within my role. And then if there's, the stage is slightly different because it's got quite a large team of critics, but most, I suppose, mainstream publications, which was in inverted commas for the benefit of the microphone, there would only be two or three critics at most writing for them. And genuinely, so that's 10 nights a week, maximum 15, that can be covered, you know, three times five. And genuinely, that would fill up very, very quickly with just the star names or the, you know, X Factor winners who are in a touring musical or whatever. So the smaller stuff doesn't get covered because there's not enough people to cover them. And that's obviously a huge, huge shame because there's a huge amount of work that's being missed. I think that's less of... I think the stage does a lot better than that, because it's got, you know, Hannah and Ava on the team and so are lots of other people. And Natasha, who's Review's editor, knows their expertise as well. And I do you find this, that she tries and sends you to shows that might match what your expertise is on place?
She doesn't, because I'm Oxford-based, so...
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
So I end up reviewing a lot of pantomime because of, I think, possibly the only stage review in Oxford. I don't know, but that comes with it then.
So do you review everything in Oxford, or do you go across the country?
I don't review for the stage very much, I have to say. It's just what Natasha's decided to cover, which tend to be like big pantos. And also I think there's a difficulty, we might come onto this, in being a maker and a theatre reviewer in a small town like Oxford. I probably shouldn't do it anymore. Or like Panthers is fine because I won't try and work with those theatres, but conflict of interest becomes a problem and just makes me very anxious. So I try, it's almost better for me to go to London and review shows because there's not that conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the London thing's a really tricky thing as well, which is that, you know, there's just no money. There's not, I mean, do you find this with getting reviews here as well? I mean, how do you find that?
I think because this has primarily been a receiving house, up to John and I started, that there often hasn't been a request from this building to have stuff reviewed. That's been much more general of like, this show's on tour and where will it be reviewed? Now we're starting to kind of ease in to producing. That may well change in the future. I think that's it. There are a couple more questions.
Yeah.
But I feel like you have a very distinct style, Arva, that carries through maybe not your face for you so much, but like your writing for Exit and your blog posts, I feel like they are very recognisably like, your voice.
Sure, and they're very much a matter like, of the moment, of like, I just saw this and this is all my stuff, which is like helpful in its own way, but like, you know, I wouldn't just rely on that.
I think I sometimes try and respond in the style of a piece, if I have a bit of time on my hands and like, oh, I could do this, so I wrote a Top Girls for you, and I wrote in three acts with kind of not making them stack up into a kind of argument. So I think that can be fun to do.
Amazing, that's rare, surely. I don't think
it's only
Exient. Exient, the blog post, they let you, yeah. They encourage that.
Yeah.
I don't know, and I've also had this thing in my head about like journalistic transparency, like should you try and be, should you even be able to know that it's Hannah writing this review, and it's something I just have in my head, but I then also I've got these more creative responses where probably only that would come from my brain, so I'm really excited.
It's difficult because everyone, like, theatre on Twitter is like a really small amount of people, and you don't really know that absolutely. So I kind of don't trust tweet reviews because the positive ones tend to, I don't know, it's just like a lot of, you know, your friend, you tweet like your friend's shows and like, you know, and then they get picked up and like get reviewed at the theatre and stuff, and so I don't always sort of take, I kind of like gloss over them if I see them, particularly at like Fringe and stuff. I'm always a bit like, I don't really know if I believe this. Just because it's like a small bubble and it's so sort of, yeah. But I don't know, Twitter's a really weird one. It's, I'm just thinking about that thing, but just because it's sort of like ostensibly quite a democratic space, but actually it's really not. And I think it's, there's a lot of sort of, not hierarchy, I don't really know. It's not as sort of simple as it just be like opening it up for everyone, even though it does allow people to like have their voice and stuff. But there's a lot of sort of performative stuff that you have to sort of create on Twitter in order to sort of like get traction and stuff. And like for me, I have a very conflicted relationship because I feel like I wouldn't be ready to exit on the stage or at all if I didn't have Twitter, and so for that I'm like very sort of like, it's great, but at the same time it's sort of, I don't know, maybe it diminishes like sort of potency of like a review to some extent. I feel like my best writing is not on Twitter. I hate it. No.
I feel like it's good in the way that it allows, it makes you think of it as a conversation and an apology, because makers can reply directly to your review. That is also really scary.
Yes.
But like generally I've had really positive things, like makers tweeting saying you really got our show, thank you for doing that, but then it also opens you up to criticism yourself. Or like they can be some quite nasty stuff on Twitter as well, and I kind of think, why don't we all be nice to each other? But I know that's not what criticism is either, so yeah, conflicted, like about Twitter. Are you on Twitter?
I am, yeah, but I'm really rubbish at it, and I don't like it.
It's great. Yeah.
I feel very frustrated at, like, seems to be, like, the quality of a lot of things.
They used to have, sorry, Liv.
Has it?
Yeah, Almeida has it, and Lyft used to do it every 2 years, which Maddie Costa ran that, which was just a workshop for critics. So it was a series of workshops. You would kind of open your eyes to what criticism can be, and then you would go to a Lyft show and write about it. And actually, I think everyone who was in the workshop I was in, not all of them have gone on to be critics, but almost every single one has gone on to be like really successful in this. Adam Foster is here, and that's what was about. Yeah, and lots of other people. So yeah, that was amazing, but that's gone now because it was funded by Ideas Tap.
Oh right.
Yeah. remember that. But on that question of quality, yeah, I mean, 80%. I don't know, but it's probably quite high. But I think, you know, as kind of the mainstream spaces have sort of diminished, so most newspapers would only have one or two critics, other spaces like Exie and like The Stage have actually used that opportunity to broaden their pool. And what that means is that The Stage now and Exie have a load of writers who actually like theatre, like who are really enthusiastic about writing about theatre and are good at it. So that's actually been a good thing, I suppose. I think the quality has increased in those perhaps more specialised spaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One last. We'll try and do all three.
That's a whole other playwright. well, because I think I'm always like, people have told me off because they've been like, you're too nice, or like you sort of don't go in enough, and so they're a bit like, you know, stay with your chest if you don't like something. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that like I know what it looks like to make a show, and I know how much goes into it, and how much like to your soul like has to sort of be in that room. And so I find that if I don't like something, but I can see the like heart in it, I find it really hard to just be like, nah, it's shit, one star, you know. Also, you know, because it's just A, it's unhelpful, and B, particularly like an emerging artist, you know, that's just not great. And I think it comes back to like Tom Brennan was saying earlier in the other panel about like radical kindness, and I really, really, really think that's so important. And I think that a lot of that has been informed by also being a maker, because it's like kindness doesn't mean being like toothless or sort of not being critical. It's sort of the, you know, criticism and kindness are not antithetical, but they are like, they have to be the same thing, and there has to be so much care in it. And I don't know, I can't imagine not doing both. I think a lot of, I've gone to trouble for doing this, but like I was like, I think a lot of the, it's a bit like what you're saying, Emily, like think a lot of makers don't like critics because it seems like the critics don't like theatre, and like it comes across that way a lot of the time. Because, but I also get it, because it's also like you see so much, you get jaded, and it doesn't have that magic anymore. But so if I was just doing criticism, I can imagine you feeling more like that and feeling less sort of attached to the sort of form. But because I also like, I don't think I've ever really lost that sort of like kind of awe. Like I have a lot of awe for people who make the show, like, I think every time I go to theatre, I'm always just like, oh my god, you made something, like, you really did it. You just, like, and it doesn't matter if it's back, you, like, you did it in the first place. Mm. And I find that quite galvanizing.
I said the last couple of questions. No, I disagree with you.
nice.
Yeah, had a question. Think I review on Twitter, but I might have a conversation on Twitter that I wouldn't review a show on Twitter. I think it's really difficult being an emerging artist in any medium and working out how much you do for free, blah blah blah. But it's like we're talking about the list thing and who funds criticism, because budgets are shrinking, and it's kind of, do we want creators to fund criticism? Then that makes conflicts of interest. Like, it's not been decided yet how, like, a viable economic model. So yeah, and maybe it ties into the ideas about criticism's value. Do people really value criticism if it's not funded? Don't know. Just lots of issues.
So on that, to wrap up, if you were able to or had to give some advice to emerging critics, for people that actually would really love to go into this field, the role where we might define
I would just start a blog.
Mm-hmm.
They're great. They're so good. And because I think I started on a blog, it gave me a license to be a lot freer with mm-hmm. expression. So I was like, oh, no one's going to read this, so it's just for me. So I could write whatever I want and respond to it however I wanted. And that was a valid expression. And I think don't feel like you have to write in a certain way, or like that you have to sort of credit. You have to talk about like how one actor was acting. You know, it, you can just respond to it from your gut, and that's completely valid response.
I think there are a few schemes available for like National Student Drama Festival has a critics scheme, which is an opportunity to see lots of work and write about it. Some universities, I know there's edfringereview.com, which some universities students go and write about, fish at the Edinburgh Fringe. So there are opportunities out there, and I think maybe it takes practice, like anything, it takes mm-hmm. practice, so I think a blog is really good advice.
Yeah, similarly, blog is a really good place, because it's free. I mean, the difficulty is that you, at the beginning, might not be getting comps to shows, so you might have to be funding that yourself, which is another tricky part of the financial aspect of it, because you know, I think you probably count on one hand the people who make a living from mm. criticism, as we were saying. So sure, that's our part of that hand count.
Oh, I thought you did.
No,
no. Disillusioned.
Sorry, no. I have a day job, which isn't criticism. So I think you can. I think that's a. It's a sort of sad bit of advice, but you should be realistic about the kind of financial aspect.
Mm-hmm. And it all feeds, doesn't it? I mean, when we're talking in, say, Catalyst, Alchemy Conflict, when we're talking to kind of emerging writers and directors, and definitely when I'm talking to emerging directors, it's what are the millions of things that you can do within this career that you find interesting, exciting, because one, there's a pragmatic thing to that, but two, they will all feed each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a really necessary part to not just focusing on one thing and having tunnel vision as well.
Yeah. And keeping that breadth of view in, you know, reading as much criticism of any kind as possible, across different genres, and being curious, and also get just email or tweet critics and ask to meet them. You admire them.
Everyone's going to be tweeting you now.
It's fine.
Great. thank you so much to everyone in the room for joining us. Thank you to our fantastic panel, and enjoy the rest of the festival.